If you're new with us, special welcome to you. My name's Alvin. I'm the lead pastor here and often do the speaking on Sunday mornings. And so glad you're here. We're actually kicking off a brand new series. And so this message today is going to be a little bit of an intro to that series. And the series is titled Life, the One You Always Wanted. We all desire life, and we're going to kind of look at that a little bit. Now, I want to tell you a true story today, as opposed to the other stories I tell that aren't true. But before I tell you this story, a couple things about me. The truth about me is I'm a sinker. I don't know what your body does in water, but when my body goes into water, I just sink. I don't know if it's the density of my bones or a lack of oxygen in my lungs, but I just immediately sink when I go and get into water. The other thing about me that's true is I hate being cold, and almost all water that's outdoors, lakes and oceans, they're just cold. I know they tell you there's some lakes in Canada that are warm. It's not true. They're all cold. The other thing that I need to say is that I grew up with a mother who had an extreme fear of water. And when I mean extreme, I mean extreme. When I was a teenager and a young kid, probably preteen, but even as a teenager, if I was taking a bath, my mom every few minutes would bang on the door to make sure I hadn't fallen asleep and drowned in the bath, because she was convinced you could drown bathing. And probably, you know, had we had Google, she would have read up at some point when I was a kid and said, you can even drown showering, so just be careful, you know. So I have this extreme fear of water, was just kind of built into me. So I sink, I'm not a good swimmer, and I hate being cold, and I have this fear of water. Now, growing up, I didn't actually spend much time in water because of those three things. But that changed a little bit when I met my wife. Well, she wasn't my wife then, but she is now, when I met Mandy. Mandy's family, unfortunately, owned a boat. And every day in the summer, if there was an evening off or on vacations, they go to the lake and they just boat and swim all the time. And after our first year of Bible college, we weren't dating yet. I was pretty interested in her, and I was pretty sure she thought I was the real deal. And so we were kind of had this thing going, and we weren't dating yet. But that summer, near the end of August, some friends from Prairie College, we decided we were going to go to Bow Island, Mandy's hometown, and just visit her. Now, of course, I was really interested in seeing her. I hadn't seen her much or at all that summer. And so I was excited to go. Unfortunately, it was a hot day. So they decided, let's go to the lake and go boating. And I'm like, oh, shoot, what am I going to do? Because I'm terrified of water and boating and so on. And I thought, you know, maybe what I can do is I can just kind of sit on the boat and just kind of watch, or sit on the beach. I don't have to get in the water. I'm taking my chances. So we get to the lake, and my plan worked pretty good for like a couple minutes. And then someone suggested, hey, there's all these college guys. Let's throw them all on the tube at one time. Four college guys, one tube. And, of course, I didn't want to show any weakness because I'm trying to impress Mandy and her family and so on. And so I'm like, sure, you know, we can jump on a tube. And I'm just, like, terrified inside. And we jump on the tube, and I'm a little skinny, and so I'm, like, 150 pounds soaking wet on a tube. All the other three guys, they're athletes, they're jacked. One guy, he just likes to work out all the time. I mean, they're way bigger and way stronger than me. And we jump on the tube, and Mandy's mom's driving, and she's like, I'm going to show these young bucks, and she just hammers down, and we're gone. And I'm terrified holding on. Now, I'm on the outer edge of the tube, and usually when you're on the outer edge of the tube, when the tube goes swinging around, everyone's weight shifts and just pushes you off the tube. I was so terrified. This is a true story. I'm not lying. That over and over and over again, all the guys were falling off the tube except for me. In fact, they would fall over top of me into the water, and I would be dragging in the water. I'd pull myself up, and I would not fall into the water. And Mandy's mom, partway through, she mentioned, she's like, I just can't get Elvin into the water. And of course, it looked like I'm just like really strong, but really, it's my weakness, right? Like, I'm just terrified. And I would not fall into the water. And I'll give you the secret as to why it was that I could, thanks Wayne, why it was that I could stay on the tube. The reason I was able to stay on the tube was because I actually believed. I actually believed. It was my belief that kept me on the tube. Not some great strength. It was my belief that if I fell into the water, I was actually going to die. And when you actually think you're going to die, you get all sorts of new strength. See, I know I was wearing a life jacket, but I'm sure my mom had told me stories of people who had drowned while wearing a life jacket as a child. And so I actually believed I was going to die, and so I would not fall into the water. And it's interesting, even after a year or two, I finally confessed my weakness. Because I'm like, if I'm going to live in this family, they need to know I hate this. And so I told them, like, I don't actually like water, and I'm terrified I'm going to drown. And so we did some practice falls off the tube. Mandy and I would sit on the tube, and they'd go slow, and I'd fall in with her. And she thought it would be funny the first time, like, oh, I'll kind of pretend I'm drowning him. Well, I'm actually thinking I'm drowning. So I just, like, grab her and put her under the water. And, like, she's like, you can't do that. I'm like, well, stop touching me. I'm drowning. And I was deathly terrified. In fact, it was around that time I decided I'm going to test my life jacket every time before we go out on the lake. And so at the edge of the water, in 4 feet of water, I would test my life jacket. Because I thought it's better to find out it doesn't work in 4 feet of water than 400 feet of water. And to this day, sometimes as the family gets together, the joke will be, hey, Alvin, did you test your life jacket? Of course, the answer is yes. So why do I tell you this story? Because what we believe changes everything. What we believe changes everything. It changes the trajectory of our life. It changes how we view life. It changes how we do life. It changes absolutely everything about our life. Even false beliefs change our life just because we believe it, even if it's not true. How much more things that are right and true change the trajectory of our own life? Now, there's one question, the answer to which, this one question, the answer to which will absolutely change your life. One question, it will change the trajectory of your life, and some would say it would even change your life after this life. It's a question that we all must answer, and every human in history over the last 2,000 years has answered. The most important question we will ever answer. There's a lot of things about the Christian faith that we can debate and struggle with. Questions about the Christian faith and religion. You know, we can debate things like things in the Bible, like did God really flood the whole earth? And did Jonah really get swallowed by a big fish? And, you know, we can debate these things. We can even debate things like, why doesn't God answer my prayer the way I always want? Or why does God let bad things happen to good people? And good things happen to bad people? And we can debate those things. And those are important things to debate. But there's one question that's more important than any other question, and it will change the trajectory of your life. And the question that we must all come to terms with is this. Who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? That question will change your life. It's a huge question about our belief. Who is Jesus? And that answering that question isn't as simple as maybe some of us think. It's quite a controversial question. Who is Jesus? If you were to walk around in Calgary or go to another town and say that question, ask 10 people, who is Jesus? You'd probably get 13 responses. It's a very controversial question. Without a doubt, Jesus is the most popular human person in history. The most powerful, influential, loved, hated, confusing, misrepresented, misunderstood, controversial, divisive, and unifying person in history. It's amazing. With the name Jesus, you can separate a mother and a son. With the name Jesus, you could cause a dad to go after his kids to try and kill him because he hates Jesus that much. And yet, with the same name Jesus, you can bring warring tribes together in unity. All one name. All to the question of, who is he? Who is Jesus? Now, some people, they believe Jesus was a good man, a miracle worker, a kind soul, a good teacher. Others believe Jesus, well, he must be the Messiah, or maybe even God in human flesh. While others believe Jesus was a complete liar, a phony, even a myth. In fact, a growing kind of thing in the world, or Western world today, is kind of the Christ myth theory. That Jesus wasn't a real person, he was just a figment of someone's imagination. In regards to Jesus being a real person, though, historians Josephus and Tacitus, who are not followers of Jesus and lived in the first century during the time of Jesus, they actually write about Jesus as a historical real person, and they talk about him being a person who was killed under Pontius Pilate. And so there is evidence that points to, and even Bart Ehrman, who doesn't believe a lot of things that traditional Christians would believe, he affirms that anyone who's a serious historical person believes that Jesus is a real person, that he lived and that he was crucified under the Romans. So who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? It's interesting, even during Jesus' life, the idea that Jesus wasn't really a real person was already prevalent in society. Jesus did so many crazy things that it makes sense that people kind of questioned him, even just a few years after he lived on the earth. Was he really real? I don't know if he was real. And actually, John, one of Jesus' closest friends, just a few years after Jesus lived on the earth, he writes and he says, here's the truth about Jesus, because people were already saying, I don't think he was real. He was a figment of your imagination. He was just a spirit. He wasn't a real physical human person. And John writes this in 1 John. He says, this is how you can recognize the Spirit of God. Every spirit that acknowledges that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. But every spirit that does not acknowledge Jesus is not from God. Even within a few years of Jesus' life on earth, they were already wondering, is he really a real person? Or was he just a spirit or a figment of someone's imagination? And John just comes to the front and says, listen, I ate with him. I touched him. He was as real can be. But it makes sense, in a lot of ways, it makes sense that people were questioning who Jesus was, even people who lived when Jesus lived. Because so much of what Jesus did and so much of what Jesus claimed is absolutely unbelievable. You know, Jesus did miracles. He raised the dead. He cast out demons. He multiplied food. He calmed a storm. He turned water into wine. He rose from death to life. It's not the kind of stuff we see every day. And so when we hear that stuff and when you hear the claims Jesus makes, it kind of makes you wonder, is it really real? Is it really true? And so 2,000 years ago, they were already debating the question we debate so often today. Who is Jesus? In fact, even when Jesus was alive, there were people that came up to him, up to Jesus, and they said, who are you? Who are you? And John, we're going to jump into a passage, John chapter 8. If you want to grab your Bibles, you can go there. John, one of Jesus' closest friends, he lets us in into some of the controversy about who Jesus was and a big war of words between Jesus and the Jews, Jesus and the religious leaders, the Pharisees. And what we see just leading up to John chapter 8, and we'll start in verse 48, but most of John is this gospel, this story about Jesus. John is telling us, who is he? Who is he? He's answering that question, who is Jesus? And all throughout, there's debate and so on, and it just kind of, the rhetoric just ramps up, and it becomes really, really personal. And by the time we get to chapter 7, 8, and 9, there's just this war of words. And pretty much after chapter 9, the religious leaders, they're not really interested in having a debate with Jesus about who he is anymore. They're just figuring out ways to kill him. They're convinced we got to kill him. But we're in chapter 8, and so there's this kind of war of words has been going on, and Jesus has been hammering them. It's pretty intense. Jesus has made claims about himself. He says, listen, I'm from above, and you guys are from below. And they're like, what are you talking about? We're children of Abraham. And Jesus, he gets them really upset because he says, actually, you're not even children of Abraham, because if you were true children or descendants of Abraham, you would believe me. Because Abraham would have believed me. So you're not really living like children of Abraham. They get really mad because you don't want to get between a Jew and their heritage. And so they get really, really angry. And by the end, just before we jump in verse 48, Jesus has actually declared, your father actually isn't Abraham. Your father's the devil. Which is a little bit, kind of mean, but probably true in this case, I guess, if Jesus said it. And so they just resort to saying, well, we don't want to debate who you are anymore. We're just going to insult you. And so they respond this way. I'll just grab. They respond, the Jews answered him, aren't we right in saying that you are a Samaritan and demon-possessed? Now, Jews didn't like Samaritans. So this is their way of trash-talking someone. It's like the Samaritans, it goes back a lot of years. They had intermarried, and they were kind of half-breeds, and so they were kind of dogs. They were half-breeds. Jews hated Samaritans. Samaritans hated Jews. And so they just resort to just trash-talking Jesus. Aren't we right in saying you're a Samaritan? And on top of that, you're demon-possessed. And Jesus responds, no, I'm not possessed by a demon, said Jesus, but I honor my Father, you dishonor me. I'm not seeking glory for myself, but there is one who seeks it, and he is the judge. And then Jesus says something really interesting. He says, very truly, I tell you, whoever obeys my word will never see death. Now, who does Jesus think he is? that if someone obeys his word, that death will never be something they see? And you can tell they're thinking, what? You've got to be kidding me. And at this, they exclaimed, now we know you're demon-possessed. Abraham, our patriarch, our father, Abraham, the great Abraham, he died. And so did all the prophets. Great men of God died. Yet you say anyone who obeys your word will never taste death? And then they ask the question, are you greater than our father Abraham? He died and so did the prophets. Who do you think you are? You know, the Jews thought very highly of Abraham, and they should have. They thought highly of the prophets. These were great men of God. And these men who obeyed God, and it was said of Abraham in Genesis chapter 26, 5, it was said that he obeyed every word of God. So here's men who are obedient to God, who followed God, and yet they saw death. And now Jesus is saying, you obey my word, and you'll never taste death? Now they're thinking strictly in physical terms. Jesus is speaking of something greater. He's speaking of a spiritual death, that your body may die, but you will never taste death, that you will see death in a new light because death doesn't have the last word on you anymore. That death is not the end of this world, it's simply the end of this one leading to a life that is greater. But you must obey my word. And Jesus continues, he says, well, listen, you think, who are you? Are you greater than the prophets? He says, listen, if I glorify myself, my glory means nothing. My Father, whom you claim is your God, is the one who glorifies me. And this is the irony of it all, right? They say, our Father is God. Our Father is Abraham and the God he worshiped. And Jesus says, the irony is that the person you say is your Father, he's the one who glorifies me. I don't have to honor myself or glorify myself. And then he says, though you do not know him, I know him. If I said I didn't know him, I'd be a liar like you. But I do know him, and I obey his word. Your father, or the one you say is your father, Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad. Now, this wasn't unheard of. There was many Jewish people in the first century that actually believed that Abraham, before he died, God gave him a vision and let him see into the future and see the Messiah, because God had told him the whole world will be blessed through you. And so there was many Jews that thought that he was given a vision of the future and that he actually saw Jesus. And so Jesus just says, your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing this day. And then they make a statement that kind of sets Jesus up to drop a bomb. It says, you're not even yet 50 years old, they said, and you've seen Abraham? Now for the Jews, once you turn 50, you kind of arrived. You had experience. I don't think they thought maybe you were old, but maybe they thought you were old. I don't know, because the Levites were allowed to retire at 50. At 50, you kind of had arrived. And Jesus is around 30, 31 years old, and they say, listen, you're not even 50. You're just a kid still. You aren't even experienced. And you say you've seen Abraham, who lived like 2,000 years before this day? Who do you think you are? You've seen Abraham, and this sets Jesus up to completely drop a bomb, and he does. And he says, very truly, I tell you, before Abraham was born, I am. I am. And this caused a ruckus. You know, if Jesus simply wanted to tell them, listen, I predate Abraham. I've been around longer than Abraham's been around. He would have just said, before Abraham was born, I was. My birthday predates him. I came before him. But Jesus doesn't say, I was. Jesus says, before Abraham was born, I am. And with that statement, he's making a statement answering that question. Jesus, who are you? Who are you? Now, Jesus made a lot of I am statements. In John, you can read about him. He made statements like, I am the true vine. I am the good shepherd. I am the bread of life. I am the gate. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the truth and the life, the way, the truth, and the life. And many of these sayings, people could just write off and say, I don't even know what that means. What does it mean you're a gate? I don't know, just lunatic. Write them off, right? What does it even mean that you're the resurrection and the life? Whatever that means, lunatic, write them off. But this time, they couldn't just say, this is a lunatic. This was a whole new level of claim that Jesus was making. See, we don't really think a whole lot of the words I am. Just kind of seems kind of cryptic. Why would you say I am? But to the Jews, it had huge, huge meaning. See, in the Old Testament, God began to reveal himself to humanity. And some of the things they learned about him were things about his character. They learned, and you can read about this in the beginning of Genesis, but we learned that God is a God who sees. He sees everything. We learn in early part of Genesis, we learn that God is a God who provides. These are the characteristics of things that God does. But when God called Moses, who had fled from Egypt, when God called him and said, I want you to go back to Egypt, to where my people, the Israelites, are slaves, and I want you to go to Pharaoh and say, let my people go, and I want you to lead my people out of Egypt, Moses said to God, he said, I can't go, because if I go, how will the people believe me that I'm from you? We don't even know your name. You say you're the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but what's your name? And God said this. Well, let's just read it in Exodus chapter 3. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they asked, well, what's his name? What do I tell them? And God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. This is God's name. I am, not I will be or I was or I'm going to do this. I am holy. I'm altogether separate. I am who I am. I'm unchanging. I am. And so when the Israelites hear the words, I am, they're not thinking, well, that's kind of cryptic. They're saying, whoa, you're claiming to be the very person of God. In Isaiah chapter 43, verse 10, God says this. Oh, I guess it's not up there. I'll just read it to you. You are my witnesses, declares the Lord, and my servant whom I have chosen, so that you may know and believe me and understand that I am he. Before me, no God was formed, nor will there ever be one after me. I am he. I am he. And John uses the exact same words that God had spoken there. Very truly, I tell you, before Abraham was born, I am. And the Jews believed Jesus was claiming to be God. And we know this because of how they responded. At this, they picked up stones to stone him. But Jesus hid himself, slipping away from the temple grounds. You know, some have claimed, well, Jesus didn't really claim to be God. He was just a son of God. He was just a prophet of God. He was just a spokesman for God. Maybe he predated Abraham, but he wasn't eternal. He wasn't claiming, I am. But the Jews who listened to Jesus claim, I am, they believed he was claiming to be eternal. They believed he was claiming to be God because they couldn't just write him off as a lunatic anymore. This was a crime that deserved capital punishment. This was blasphemy. And they stood up and they said, we will stone him to death. This is Jesus. He doesn't come to us simply as a nice man, a good teacher, a moral leader. The very person of Jesus actually forces every one of us to decision. The person of Jesus demands a response. Either we accept him for who he claimed to be, or we reject him. You can't sit on the fence when it comes to Jesus. His claims actually make it so. C.S. Lewis wrote this way. He said, Jesus was either a lunatic, a liar, or he's Lord. He's a lunatic, a liar, or he's absolutely who he claimed to be. You know, many of us might be tempted to sit on the fence. We hear things about Jesus. We say, man, I like that teaching of Jesus. And yeah, he was probably a pretty good guy, but we don't actually want to believe he's Lord. But Jesus' claims actually force us not just to believe he was a good person. Because anyone who claims the things that Jesus claimed, either is a madman who lost his mind, and why would you want to follow him? Or he lied about who he was, and none of us want to follow a liar. Or he is exactly who he claimed to be. You know, there's another polarizing person. I heard this a little while ago. I don't get into politics, okay? So I'm not saying this is a good or bad person. Just telling you a story. So Donald Trump, just south of us, is a bit of a controversial person. And I read a headline a while back about a guy who obviously has a lot of disdain for Donald Trump. And he said this. He said, "Even if Trump was to walk on water, I wouldn't vote for him." Meaning, I think this guy's a lunatic. I think this guy's a madman. And I don't care what kind of miraculous powers he could conjure up, I wouldn't vote for him because he's crazy. And here's the thing about Jesus. He forces us to make a decision. We can't just say, "Well, I think he's a good guy," because some of the claims he made, good guys don't make those claims. Either he is who he claimed to be, or he's an absolute lunatic and a liar. You know, Jesus claims some pretty crazy things. And when we ask the question, who is Jesus, we have to wrestle with those crazy claims. So what would convince us to take the crazy claims of Jesus and actually believe them? What would make us want to believe the crazy claims of Jesus? Because here's what he claimed. He claimed to be God. He said, "I am." He claimed to be the resurrection and the life. Who claims that? What sane person claims to be the resurrection and the life? He claimed not only to know the truth, he said, "I am the truth." Who makes that kind of claim? He claimed not only to know the way to life, he said, "I am life." Who makes that kind of claim? He claimed to have power to forgive sins, which only God can do. If you ever meet anyone who makes these kinds of claims, you walk away as far and as fast as you can. These are ridiculous claims, and many people did, and many people have. But what would cause us to stop and pause with these claims of Christ? One thing that would cause us to pause, one thing that all of the Christian faith rests on when it comes to the person of Jesus. You see, Jesus' family thought he was a lunatic. In fact, one time, Jesus' brothers and his mother, they came to him, and they said, "He's lost his mind." They went to go get control of him. They said, this guy's lost his mind. He's a lunatic. But something caused Jesus' brother, James, to pause and rethink his thoughts about Jesus. And that one thing was the resurrection of Jesus. You see, when Jesus died, none of his followers, not one of them stepped up as the hero and said, "I still believe." Because everyone said, "You're an idiot. The guy who claimed to be the resurrection and the life is dead. Why would you believe in him? I don't think that one's working." No one stood. You see, no one claimed to still believe in Jesus because Jesus didn't teach good things about God. Jesus taught good things about himself. He built the entire thing on him. And when he ceased to exist, no one stood up and said, "I still believe." He said, "I'm the gate. I'm the resurrection and the life. I'm the way, the truth, and the life." But when the way, the truth, and the life is dead, you stop believing. And you say, that was a lunatic. But it all changed when they saw with their own eyes Jesus rise back to life. And with him rising back to life, when God raised Jesus back to life, it proved true every claim Jesus ever made. And almost all the disciples died, not for what they said they believed about Jesus, but for what they saw. That they saw the resurrection and they continued to declare, "We saw him alive," and they died for what they had seen. And how they answered that question, who is Jesus? So what will you do with the question? This is the question we must all wrestle to the ground. What will you do with the question, who is Jesus? If you're tempted to sit on the fence and say, "Well, I like some things about Jesus, but I want, you know," Jesus would say, "No, you can't sit on the fence. You accept all of me or none. of me? What will you do with the person of Jesus? Everything hangs in the balance to the answer to this one question. Notice the question isn't, who was Jesus? Because if he only was, write him off. The question is, who is he today? Who is he still? John, who saw Jesus die and rise back to life, wrote the Gospel of John. In this series, Life, the One You Always Wanted, we're going to be just diving into the Gospel of John, different parts of this Gospel. But John wanted you to know what he saw with his own eyes. John wanted you to know and to believe. And John believed that the answer to this question would change everything. In fact, the answer to this question would lead us to the life we all want. Real, true, eternal life. So as we come back next week, we're going to dive into this series a little more. And we're going to dive into this question, who is Jesus? Is he truly the life we all really want? Let's bow to pray. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for eyewitnesses that we can read about, things that they saw that were seen by many, many eyewitnesses, and that this record was held for us this many, many years later. Father, as we each must come to that question and answer that question, who are you? May we not be settled until we wrestle with it. And Father, may we come to see as John saw, that you are Jesus, exactly everything that you claimed you were. And Father, we pray that our lives would be reflective of that, that we would not just try to take bits and pieces of who Jesus was, but that truly, if you did rise from the dead, that if you are Lord, that our lives would reflect that, and we would live under that lordship. And pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen.